We're in the book of Matthew again. Well, in the book of Matthew, column off the old. The gospel according to Matthew. Column means according to and off the old. The gospel according to Matthew. All right. Let's go there. Matthew, the seventh chapter. This is also a test. Every morning we have a test. All right. What does Matthew mean?
A gift from God.
Huh?
A gift from God.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. A gift from God, Matthew. All right. Matthew, the seventh chapter. Matthew, chapter 7. What he's talking about here is outlaw religion. Do we know what outlaws are, don't we? Outlaws?
I would say a Muslim would be an outlaw religion.
What?
A Muslim or Buddhist would be an outlaw religion.
Yeah. Lots of religions are outlaw religions. There are lots of outlaw religions. There's about 2,000 denominations of outlaw religions in the world. All of these are outlaw religions. Now let's find out what makes up an outlaw religion. Okay? What makes up an outlaw religion? We're going to find that up in a minute. In a few minutes, that is. The Pharisees and the Sadducees were the basic objects of Jesus' direction of this at this time. The Pharisees, and they were the most elite sect of Judaism. The Sanhedrin court was the object of this lesson. The Sanhedrin court. All courts of law in any length, in any country, will have the greatest judgment of God in the final great white throne judgment. Did you know that? Lawyers and judges are officers of the court. They will answer to God for all of their diversions from real justice. One of these days, they're responsible. When you run into, if you ever have anything to do with a lawyer, tell him, you know that God holds you under great account for what you do here. I know that you must have a feel that you've got a great responsibility because you're going to have the greater judgment because they have set themselves up as judges. Okay? Let's look and see what it's called. The Sanhedrin court was a religious court, wasn't it? Was it not? Okay? Outlaw religion. And outlaw law. Lawlessness. Do not judge lest you be judged yourselves. For in the way that you judge, you will be judged. By your standard of measure, it shall be measured to you. The Pharisees had invented more laws than Moses gave them. Had they not? The law of Moses does not say you shall not walk on the grass on the Sabbath. Does it? You can show me in the Bible where it said that, but the Pharisees said that. The Pharisees said you will not eat an egg that's laid by a chicken on Saturday, or on the Sabbath. Cannot eat an egg that's laid by a chicken, because the chicken broke the law. There are many, many, you had the Sabbath day journey, you had all the different ideas that they had. Their law. They're going to be judged by these laws. You make these laws up, when it comes to the white throne judgment, you're going to be judged by them. You make laws for people, you're going to be judged by them. Every criminal that's ever been set free by any scoundrel judge and lawyer is going to answer for everything that they've done. There will be justice. And why do you not look at the speck in your brother's eye? Now, this is an old story here, you know, an old parable. The parable of the speck and the log, basically. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not notice the log in your own eye, the building beam? My house has got great big windows in it. Great big windows. That was when they actually built the house, it's not foundationally sound. But I'm sure above those windows there must be building beams in there that are that tall and that wide. Because some of the windows are over 20 feet. When you have that much span, you've got to have a building beam. That's the kind of beam that's talking about right here, a great big building beam. Now, how many of you ever got a speck of dirt or a chip of something in your eye? Okay, sometimes you have trouble finding it, don't you? Well, what it's talking about here, look at this. How can you say to your brother, let me take out the speck out of the eye and behold a log, a great big 4x20 or 4x24 is sticking out of your eye? I mean, it's pretty impossible to really get something that big in your head, but that's what it's talking about here, a great big building beam. Great big building beam. By the way, what we're talking about, wood and carpentry and all that kind of stuff, you know that there weren't carpenters in the Bible days. There were cabinet makers and things like that, but there were no carpenters because the houses were built out of stone. They would lay beams across the thing, but you really didn't need anything like that. Jesus probably was not a carpenter. He was probably a stonemason. But any of the carpenters were woodworkers. They carved things. They made little tables. And they didn't hardly use any chairs at all. Period. So there wasn't a carpenter. Basically, was like a wood shop, like a cabinet shop. That's basically all they did. They had cabinets and small things like that, like coffee tables. The building log, the great big building beam, the log that's your eye. How can you take a speck out of your brother's eye when you've got a building beam stuck through your head? You hypocrite. What does that word hypocrites? What does it mean?
Does one thing and does another.
No. It's an actor. Like I've told you before, Brother Madden, when his brother or his father-in-law came to Anaheim, he lived in Anaheim, he was pastor of the church there in Anaheim, Grace Missionary Baptist Church in Anaheim, California, for about 18 years, I think. Anyway, his father-in-law came out there and he said he wanted to go see the actors' home. He wanted to go on a bus tour and wanted to see the actors out there. He said, what do you want to see that bunch of hypocrites for? They're just standing up there in front of the camera lying, telling you who somebody they are. He said, well, John Wayne's my idol. He said, he's a liar. Standing up there lying about who he says he is. That's an actor. In the biblical days and in the Grecian days, they had three masks that they used. And they would stand in front of the mask and they would use different voices. And one person would play all the parts in the play. He would get up there and play all the parts.
And that's the hypocrite?
That's the hypocrite. He's changing the face. Changing his face. All right? That's what the term means. In early America, before television and before radio, people would go and meet in the neighborhood church or school. Many times the church house and the school house were one and the same. And they would have recitals. People would get up there and tell stories, and they would do act. They'd have a lot of different plays. When I lived up there in Fish Lake Valley when I was a young boy, we had plays. And everybody would memorize parts, and that was entertainment. They didn't have any radio and television. They didn't have any electricity. I have entertainment. Well, hypocrites, they're actors. You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you can see clearly enough to take the speck out of your brother's eye. False religion. Now he's telling you, this is pretty rough language right here. Pretty rough language. Here we go into another figure of speech, a parable or figure of speech. Do not give what is holy to dogs. What?
Don't throw your pearls before swine.
Yeah, well, let's go back and look at it. Matthew 7 and verse 6. Not to give the holy things to the PCs. We got a word canine from that. To the dog. To the dog. Don't give what is holy to the dog. Do any of you have study Bibles? Any of you have a study Bible? Hey, you have a study Bible there? What does it say over there for the deal of golf? Does it have anything to say about golf?
Oh, it only has holy. It doesn't have the dogs.
Okay, does anybody have any study Bible that says anything about the dogs over there? All right. What the dogs are is homosexual, male homosexual prostitutes. That's what they are, probably speaking. Okay? It could mean dogs, like a dog, but if it's referring to a dog, it means Gentiles or people that are profane. A homosexual is profane. He is reprobate. Romans, the first chapter, tells you that they're reprobate. They have denied the truth and gone the wrong way. Okay? Don't give what is holy to dogs. Revelation 22 and verse 15, go there. Revelation 22 and verse 15. I think it's 22 and 15, if I can read my writing.
Revelation
22 and verse 15. By the way, it's Revelation, not sure. Okay. All right. Revelation 22 and verse 15. I want you to go read that, Brother Brett.
Okay.
Real loud now. This is all like you're speaking to a class you're going to be teaching one of these days.
Outside are the dogs and the sorcerers and the immoral persons and the murderers and the idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying.
Okay, now what does it say over there? Does it have anything to say about dogs over there? There's going to be no dogs in heaven is what it said right here. I preached the sermon, no dogs in heaven.
It doesn't say that.
Well, this should be translated as male homosexual or homosexual. That's what the dog said. Okay.
You said 15, right? Not 14.
15, yes. Blessed to those who walk, 14 said, blessed to those who wash their robes that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter into the gates into the city. Outside are the homos, the queer, and the sorcerers, and the sorcerers, the drug addicts, the drug pushers. What do you find in all this drug business? You find prostitution, don't you? Drugs and prostitution. And stealing. Look at all this. And the immoral persons. Those that just absolutely don't have any moral boundaries at all. Aselgia is the word. Just to let it all hang out. Alright? Just wild. Murderers and idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying. Practices lying as a what? Profession. Now, I told you earlier that the judges and lawyers are going to be in a lot of trouble, isn't it? They are professional liars. They ain't going to make it there. Simple as that. Unless they repent and they do what they're supposed to be doing. Because God is going to hold them under more accountability than anyone else. All right. Do not give what is holy to these immoral persons. Do not throw your pearls before swine. All right? Now, if any of you ladies, oh, my cousin's got pearls on today. Those, the pearls. Okay? Pearl earrings and pearls. Now, how many of you have ever seen white corn? Have you ever seen white corn? Hard white corn. Okay?
Yeah.
How many? Yep. It kind of looks like pearls, doesn't it? To a certain extent, it looks like pearls. By the way, all corn came from this country. That's an Indian food. All right? Indian food. Europe didn't have any of that over there. Whereas King James says the word corn in there, they don't know what they're talking about because there wasn't any corn over there. All right? They had wheat and barley and things like that. No corn in Europe. Corn came from here. All right. Well, corn, pearls of barley, barley pearls, barley pearlies and corn, anything like that, any type of any wheat, it looks like little pearls. Have you ever seen these little cultured pearls and things look like wheat and corn and, or barley pearls? That's what it's talking about here now. If hogs got a temper, don't they? They have a temper. They're pretty vicious animals if you can make them mad. So they can be, they're probably one of the most intelligent animals that walks on God's earth. But they can become very vicious. I had one out there, most of you guys, Brother David, you saw old Wilbur out there, and I think, Doris, didn't you see the pig we had out there one time? Old Wilbur. Wilbur was my pet. But you didn't want to make Wilbur mad. One time, I had one of my guys that worked for me out there over the years, he came out there, And I told him, I said, now when we feed Wilbur, don't get around Wilbur's troughs. Okay? Don't get around Wilbur's food. And we would soak barley, or we would soak wheat, and it would swell up and it looked like a little girl. Okay? Keep this in mind. And we would put this in our hog trough. Well, for some reason or other, I don't know what happened, some limbs had fallen and Wilbur's pen or whatever, but Ricky, my friend Ricky, he goes into Wilbur's pen. And Wilbur's fine because she likes people. She likes company. Okay? And there was a gate. Wilbur was so smart that she could open every gate and turn on every faucet on my ranch. We had to change all the gates and do it, either take the handles off the faucets where she was going to be or something because she would turn them off. She liked doing that. I went out there one time when I first got her when she was little. She was about 6 or 7 pounds when I got her, carried her into place, and she got up to about 1,100 pounds. She was big. But I carried her in there and put her in her little pen, and she used to jump over in this and play in the water trough. Well, underneath there was a water valve with a float on it. Well, the water valve finally got a hole in it, and the water tank was running over. So I went out there one time, and when I would get down on my knees to work on anything, Wilbur would take my shoes off and take off of them. She'd play keep going. I got down in there, and I reached underneath that thing, and I took the unscrewed the float, and I put another float in there, and she was right over there looking at me, just like this, all the time I'm doing this. She's looking at me. I went in there, and I put the float back on, and I set the thing, and everything was fine. I walk out of the pen, and I look over here, and in trough she is, her head's under the water, she's reaching over there with her nose, and goes, and unscrews the float, just like that. Takes the float out, in her mouth, and went, with a float in her mouth. Finally, I had to turn the thing on, and I couldn't keep a float on it. Anyway, Ricky, he is in the pen with this intelligent pig. She is about 1,100 pounds at this time. She's very big. And he walks in there, and he's throwing limbs out of the pen or whatever. Well, he feeds her. There's a gate that you walk into her pen with. Used to, there had a latch on the inside and one on the outside. We had to take the latch off the inside because she would open it. And she would get out and want to come up and leave and sit on the porch and visit with everybody else. Well, Ricky didn't want to climb over the fence, so he gets down there, puts his head down by Wilbur's trough, and reaches underneath the gate to open the gate. Wilbur looked over there and goes, whoa. And her head is about this long. And her mouth is about this long. A great big. Ricky's a pretty good sized guy. But she just picked over there and put her jaws on both sides of him like that and went and tossed him. Out of the way. She didn't want him fooling with her food. Okay? She didn't want him fooling with her food. She just tossed him. He was white as sheet. He'd come in there and he's, Wilbur. I said, what happened, Ricky? Wilbur. I said, what happened? He said, well, I don't know. He said, she put her mouth around my whole shoulders and went like this, poof, and threw me. He said, she didn't bite me or anything. She just threw me out of the way. Bounced me off the wall over there. I said, well, tell me what happened. Well, he says, I didn't want to climb over the fence, so I reached down there and I said, had you fed Wilbur? Yeah. I said, all that pig was doing this, speaking pig Latin to you when you reached out and got too close to her trough. Just get away from him. He said, I'm not ever going to do that. He learned his lesson. I'll go back to this one. Do not throw your pearls before swine. When wheat or corn or barley swells up, it looks like pearls. Now, if you throw feed down there for a pig, they're going to like it. Yummy, yummy. Well, what if you threw a bucket full of pearls down there and they crunched into them like they're biting into rocks? You think they might get mad and go after you? You try to trick an animal, sometimes they get mad. And pigs are intelligent. You don't fool a pig. You fool a pig, you're fooling with danger. Do not give what is holy to dogs. Do not throw your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and get very angry and turn and tear you to pieces. Or pick you up and then give you a real good talk. Okay? 7 to verse 7. Ask, it shall be given to you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened to you. For everyone who asks, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it shall be opened. And what man is there among you, when his son shall ask for a loaf of bread, shall give him a stone? How many of you have ever seen a round loaf of bread? Like sheep herd bread or something. Sometimes they're about that big. They look like, how many of you have ever seen a rock that looks just like that? Now just think about this for a minute. We're talking about pearls, hard pearls, before swine, and being dishonest to swine, and tricky to swine, like pouring gravel in their trough, and here they bite into the gravel, and they become mad. That's a chastity. What person, what father, if his son asked him for a loaf of bread, would give him a stone and let him bite into that and break his teeth on the stone? That wouldn't be very good, would it? Okay. But false religion does that every day. I want you to understand this. False religion does this every day. False religion promises people eternal life, and they give them eternity in hell instead. False religion will always ask more of you than what the truth will. False religion will always ask more of you than true religion will. False religion always tries to get you to work your way to heaven. What are false religions? False religion promises you things that are not real so many times. The Mormons. The Mormon Church. Just take that. Look at that for just a moment. The Mormon Church. Every Mormon woman wants to have a Mormon husband. Do you know that? You know why that's so important? Why, Brother Brad?
Because they decide whether or not they go to heaven or not. I think that's part of it.
Okay. A Mormon man is a god in embryo. A Mormon man is a small, lesser god. Here we have God the Father way up here, and we have God, the head of each family down here. This is Mormon theology. Hold on. Every man is a god in embryo, and he will follow, and he is an eternal spirit. Some god in heaven procreated with a mistress up there and had this child, and that's how you're born down on this earth. Did you know that? This is Mormonism. For a while, then. Joseph Smith and Brigham Young had a real good imagination.
And he's a god on earth.
Go on. Okay. Now, a woman, a Mormon woman, no woman has an eternal spirit or soul. No woman is equal to man, according to Muslims or to Mormons. The only way a Mormon woman can get to heaven is if she pleases her husband. And he, when they're married in the Mormon temple, she has a special name that man will call that name, and he will take the veil off of her face. They bury her with a veil on her face. He'll remove the veil and call her name, and she'll be resurrected from the grave. The man resurrects the woman, and she is a servant in eternity.
That don't sound so bad to me.
You can watch. How come you're not born?
I mean,
if you don't straighten up, I'm not going to direct you. They're objects of pleasure and objects like cattle. Okay? You just go to church with him. You still do. Follow each other around. True religion is made up of the doctrines of the Bible. False religion is made up from all kinds of outlaw ideas, and this is an outlaw idea of man, womankind, and mankind. Women are, they have eternal souls. A woman has to be saved just like a man. A woman doesn't have to please her husband to get to heaven. Yep, Joanne. You don't have to please Bill to get to heaven.
She knows that already.
You can get saved just like that man gets saved. Except in America, most women are lesser than men in any culture in the world. Period.
In America, they're usually the boss.
What man is there among you when his son shall ask him for a loaf of bread, will give him a stone? Verse number 10. Or if she shall ask him for a fish, will he give him an unclean eel or snake? A water snake or an eel. Okay? He's going to ask for a fish and you give him some water snake or eel. How many of you have ever been fishing in Texas and Oklahoma? I went back to Texas one time with a farmer for 2 or 3 weeks back there helping my friend Billy Bowles on his cotton farm. I planted a lot of cotton back there near Anson and Anson, Texas, and Abilene. They had a great big lake out there. There's a lot of lakes back there. And I went to this lake. Billy says, why don't you go over there and go fishing? There's some real big catfish out there. He says, when you walk, drive into this place, it's about 2 miles in there, and there's railroad tie posts all the way up. And if you look on top of the railroad tie post, you'll see a fish's head. A catfish head stuck down over there. Great big heads. Big heads. On top of all these posts, they had a mouth stuck over the post. All the way down. He said, those are big catfish in that thing. I went down in there and went out there, and the guy said, you can't hardly fish for the cotton moccasin, for the water moccasin. He said, I'm not even going to charge you for going to fish. He said, I don't think you're going to catch anything. There's so many water moccasins this year. And I looked right out there and I said, boy, there are a lot of water moccasins out there. I said, I'll tell you what, is it all right if I shoot one? I said, I got a pistol with me. Can I shoot some of those? He went back over there and he brought some boxes of shells. He said, here, shoot on all of them you want. We threw the lions out there and the water boxes were going after the bait. And the turtles and whatever else. We couldn't get the fish to bite at all. Well, I tell you what, I got to shooting for snakes. And I had that whole bank, I mean for 200 feet, working alive with just dead snakes all over the place. I killed probably, I don't know how many boxes of shells he gave me, but I used them all up and I killed a lot of water moccasins. Now, some people might eat them, but I don't eat water moccasins. And I've eaten rattlesnakes a few or three times, but don't give me a water moccasin. If a son shall ask for a fish, will his father give him a snake or an eel? Snake and eel, basically both of them are unclean according to the law. They're not kosher. Verse number 11. And if you then being evil, look at that. You then being evil. Look at that word. If you then being evil. Verse number 11. Let's look at that word for evil. Evil. Boy, that's poneroi. Poneroi. You know what poneroi means?
Twisted
in your understanding. Twisted. Crooked. Have you ever run into somebody and they were crooked as a barrel of snakes? That's twisted. That's what this word means. Twisted. Perverted. If you being perverted and evil know how to give good gifts to your children. Why, even a Pharisee would take good care of his children, wouldn't he? But he was as crooked as a barrel of snakes. He was evil, twisted. He was an outlaw religion at that time. How much more shall your Father, who is in heaven, give what is good to those who ask Him? True religion, God's good to you. God doesn't ask you to do anything or prohibit from doing anything that's not good for you. Everything you do, everything He asks you to do is good for you and good for everybody around you. Why do we have law officers? When you were coming to church this morning, did anybody pass you going 100 miles an hour? Drive up on the sidewalk and everything else? They would if we didn't have officers of law around. they'd be driving around like a bunch of wild idiots. I went down here on Old River Road here a couple of years ago, and a guy had been driving through White Lane, driving 120 and 30 miles per hour. He finally piled in and went into a stone wall over there. He paralyzed two or three people and really banged them up really bad all around. Now, we had law officers around. How much of that would be going on if you didn't have an officer of the law? We're going to study Romans, the 13th chapter, next Wednesday night, talking about law and order. Therefore, whatever you want others to do for you, do so for them, for this is the law and the prophets. The whole law was about what? The golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If everybody, now, just think about the people down on Skid Row down there, and the druggies, and the prostitutes and everything. How would you like to turn your finances over to one of them for a few minutes? Your destiny. That wouldn't be very good. With some of these television preachers, these big shot preachers. How many? What did old Baker get in trouble for so much?
He was getting prostitutes.
No, well, that didn't have anything to do. That wasn't why he went to jail.
Oh, you
think no. That's what you remember about him, the prostitute, but that wasn't the crime, people.
No, the crime was against God when he was using the church for his own personal gain.
That's right. That's what he went to prison for. He didn't go to prison for fooling around with prostitutes. That wasn't the problem. That wasn't illegal. All right. His real problem was robbing people of God. Robbing the people of God. All right. That's why he got in trouble. Hey, back on the radio. Back on the television.
Yeah.
Got out of prison. He's back out there doing the same thing again.
Back on the airwaves.
Yeah, back on the air.
The prince of the devil.
Gave him another shot.
The devil's prince of the airwaves.
Yeah. Verse number 13 now. Number 13. Gabrielle, are you there?
Yeah.
Could you read that real loud for me, verse 13?
Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it.
All right. Who else has another translation that? Joanne, you have the Living Bible over there, New Living Translation. What does that verse number 13 say there to you?
You can enter God's kingdom only through the narrow gate. The highway to hell is broad, and its gate is wide for the many who choose the easy way. But the gateway to life is small, and the road is narrow, and only a few ever find it.
All right. How many have the Amplified Bible?
Mine's a little different from that.
Yours is a little different. What does yours say there, Brett?
It says, enter by the narrow, for the gate is wide, and the way the road that leads to destruction.
All right. The straight gate is what it used to be, I think, in King James. Doris, do you have King James? Okay, could you read that for me, please?
Okay. Enter ye at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and may there be which to go in thereat.
All right. How many of you ever worked cattle? Bill, you ever worked cattle?
A little bit.
You ever gathered up cattle before? I know you used to team pen and stuff like that.
I don't like the back end.
Oh, you don't like that.
I'd rather have it on my plate.
Pretty dangerous, aren't they? Cattle, you run them through a squeeze chute. A long time ago, we used to drive Mustangs and had a flying wing. Here was a trail like this, but it had a real wide gate here, and then out here was wings like this. They used to have stone, they'd put fences up there, they'd have bushes, all kinds of stuff, pretty tall. And you could run a herd of horses, and you drive them, into the narrow gate, to get them into this narrow gate here. And then you shut the gate, and they were in a round trail, really tall, so they couldn't get out. Now, the gate to eternal life is not like this, wide ring. There's only enough room for you to go through. It's just as wide as you are. You can't take any of your own ideas with it. That gate is not, does not have room for any of your own opinions about God or salvation. It's so narrow. That gate is so narrow that only by God's word and only by His edicts will you be saved. And what is it? Romans 3:23 says what? Romans 3:23. Anybody know what Romans 3:23 says?
Why? Why does the
Romans 3:23. What's Romans 3:23 say? What?
No.
Romans 3:23. Young man, do you know that?
For all have sinned and fallen short of grace of God.
For all have sinned. Fallen short of the glory of God. For all have sinned. We all are sinners, aren't we? So the first thing you have to do to get to heaven is to realize that you are a sinner. You're not good. You have fallen short of God's glory. Okay? Romans 6:23 says what? Romans 6:23 says what? This is what we call the Roman road to salvation. And this is the narrow road I'm talking about. The narrow road that we're talking about here. Are you there, brother?
Yeah. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord.
For the just rewards, for your wages. For the wages of sin is death. You know what? I turned 65 years old the other day. I feel like I have lived 160 years already. My body is wore out. It's wore out. You know why? Because of the sin nature I got from my father. That he got from his father, that he got from his father, that he got from his father, that all goes all the way back to Adam. Our bodies are degenerating. Degenerating because of sin. The best person in the world dies because of the infection that Adam gave them. But when you start hurting, I've had all kinds of problems because I had cancer and radiation and chemotherapy and all that kind of junk. I mean, they worked me over. That really shortened my life. But how many of you can't eat what you used to eat when you were young? How many of you are lactose intolerant? Anybody around here? Did you remember when you could drink milk? Maybe at one time, no. I used to like to drink milk. It used to make me sick. I didn't know why. I would drink milk and get sick. I went out in the ungodly oil fields and started working out there and staying up all night long. And having to, work all night long. So I would take cereal and I would eat cereal with milk in the middle of the night. Boy, I would be sicker than a dog. Boy, I mean, I would be sick. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was lactose intolerant. There was a time when I could drink milk. But it had to quit. My body became intolerant of it. You start realizing that you can't do what you used to do when you were younger. I used to just stand in front of a 3-foot fence and jump over it without ever taking the jump. I could just jump over a 3-foot fence. I could jump on a horse. Just stand right there and jump on a horse. Just you. I can't do that anymore. We wear out. The narrow gate. We can't take any of our own ideas to heaven. Romans, are you still on Romans, brother? Okay. What's Romans 10:13 say?
For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved.
For everybody who calls on the name of the authority of the Lord shall be saved. The authority of God. You're only going to get to that narrow gate. You can't take your own ideas with you. Only one way of salvation. The only one way of salvation is we call on the Lord to save us. We're not saved by partial works. We're not saved with our ideas. We're not saved with ancestor worship. We're not saved by anything else. You can't build up good works to where your good works outweigh your bad ones. See, that's going to get knocked off in this narrow way, all these ideas. We do good works because we owe God debt when we're saved. We owe Him debt. We do it as debtors. We don't do it to get there. All right, we do it as debtors. Enter in the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and many are those who enter by it. That's outlaw religion. Outlaw religion. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and few are those who find it. Beware of the false religionist, the false prophet. Beware of the false prophet. In this world today, you can see every shade of lie and truth and error there is out there, and all kinds of mixtures of it out in the world today. Beware of false prophets who come in to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are savage wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? Even so, every good tree bears fruit, but the rotten tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce good fruit, nor can a rotten tree produce good fruit. For every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and made into firewood. I live out there where there's a lot of almond orchards. I have a neighbor out there named John, and he took out 40 acres of almond trees. He said, I did everything I could to those trees. They wouldn't produce fruit, and they had a disease in them. I could not get it. He said, I did everything. I sprayed them. He said, I put stuff in the ground. I did everything I could, and now they are firewood. And Brother David went out there, and you picked up some of that firewood, didn't you? A bad tree is turned into firewood. False religion is turned into firewood in hell. That's where it's going to go, firewood and hell. The fuel of the fire and hell. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown in the fire. So then you will know them by their fruits. Verse number 21. Not everyone who says unto me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Outlaw religion, remember, that's the whole subject of the seventh chapter. Many will say to me on the day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles? Great acts? Then I will declare unto them, what? I never knew you. I never knew you. You are in another cow pen. You went to another gate. You're an outlaw religion. A religion that's not founded by me and does not have Jesus Christ as the center of it. I never knew you. Depart from me. You who practice lawlessness, outlawry, bandits, bandit religion. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts upon them may be compared to a wise man who built his house upon a rock. Matthew 16 and 18. Someone go there. Matthew 16 and 18. We got to hurry. Matthew 16 and 18. David, you've got a real good translation of this in your head, I know.
I got it.
You got it. All right.
No, I mean, I have it here.
You got it.
I don't have it.
All right. Brother Brett. I'm depending on Matthew 16:18. Kalamathion 16:18. Now hurry up.
Okay.
Hurry up. Inspedite me.
All right, here we go. And also I say to you that you are Peter.
I say unto you that you're Peter.
And upon this rock.
But upon this great big foundational rock, what?
I will build my church.
I shall be building the church of me. What rock was he talking about? Peter wasn't the rock that the Lord's church is built upon. Catholic Church will tell you that. Half of Protestantism will tell you that. Who's the rock? He said, you are Petros, a small stone. Peter's name was also Cephas, which means small stone. But upon this Petra, gigantic foundational rock, like Moro rock, like the rock up here, Mount Moriah. What? Go on there, Brother Brett, now.
Okay, Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades.
Hell.
It says Hades.
The gates of Hades, or hell, or the unseen world, shall not wrestle her down.
Yep.
That church is going to be here when he comes back. All right? Like a wise man who built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and burst against the house, yet it did not fall, for it had been founded upon a rock. And everyone who bears these words of mine, who hears these words of mine, and does not act upon them, will be like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. Outlaw religion. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and burst against the house, and it fell, and great was the fall. When a man builds all of his whole life upon false religion, and he goes to hell. The result was when Jesus finished these words, the multitudes were amazed at his teaching. Why were they amazed? Verse number 29. Gabriel, are you there again? Verse number 29. Matthew 7:29.
Because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law.
Why? For he taught as one having authority. That was his word he was speaking. The whole word from Genesis to Revelation is Jesus' word. That's his word he did. Not as the scribes. Who were the scribes? They were the people that were in the Sanhedrin court that took down all of the court tribes. They were the people that wrote the law of Moses, that wrote the Old Testament, and had to get it certified by the head of the Sanhedrin court, by the chief priest. It had to be certified, everything. They were the ones, but they had no authority because they were in an outlaw religion. They had turned the truth into a lie. They had turned the truth into a lie. And then in chapter number 8, where we're going to go in here, we're going to find out Jesus' messianic position. He's going to prove who he is. He said, these people have been jerking you around. They've been strangling you. They have been robbing you. They've been leading you in the wrong direction. And he said, I'm going to show you the difference between them and me. I don't ask anything of you. If you give anything to me, it's because you want to. They had treasure in that church, didn't they? Jesus called a church out there at the Sea of Galilee. The Ecclesia was called out. Who was the treasure in that church? Who was the treasure? Judas Iscariot. He was stealing out of the treasury. All right. We had officers. We had 12 apostles in the church already. Okay. They had a limited commission, and some of those people were giving money to the church. And why were they giving to Jesus? Because they wanted to. He didn't ask them for anything. He didn't ask them. When I pastored the church, we didn't even have an offering plate in the church. Did you know that? We didn't have one. One time a missionary came and the church voted to take up an offering. We had to go to the kitchen and get a pot to put the money in to pass it around. We didn't have an offering plate. But we had plenty of offerings. We paid everything off the church house and paid for everything else. I never asked them to give anything. If they wanted to give anything in Sunday school, they took it to the treasurer. Handed it to them. In the Sunday school class, if they wanted to give an offering, they took it and they gave it to the teacher and she gave it to the treasurer. Nobody asked anything. People come to church and they say, where's the offering plate? We don't have one. I want to give. And I said, you're not a member of the church. We don't want your money. You didn't have to break their arm. You just told them that they ought to give. If you're a member of the church, you ought to support it. That's what I said. And I told them that about once a year. That was good. It lasted all year long. Brother Brett.
Who was the treasurer after his Timothy?
I don't know. Well, Timothy took some money one time, yeah. He carried some money. He carried an offering. He was a messenger. All right. Thank you for your kind attention. Hope you learned something from God's Word today. Did you learn something from that chapter? Good stuff. We'll try to cover a chapter a week if we can. And there's some good stuff in the book of Matthew. And then we'll go on from there. Brother Bill.
Thank you. Yeah, I never heard a word out of church, but I understand what you're saying now. That's a new word for me to remember, but any outlaw church would be one that would consider the dead and way when Jesus Christ died for their sins, and you got to go through him to go to heaven. That would be any church other than that would be considered an outlaw church.
That is a church history class. There's a lot of outlaw churches in the land. If it's not founded upon Jesus, if he didn't call it out, it's not his. You can get every shade of it in this world. Okay. Every shade in the world.
Where did these squirty stuffers get all of that? Women and stuff. I can't understand.
Outlawry. They didn't get it from the Bible.
Where did they get it that they lived in South America? Where did they come up with all that?
What do you mean, the Mormonism?
The Mormons,
yeah. Oh, that Jesus came up here and all that stuff?
No, that they originally...
Oh, how they were white. Oh, the American Indians are the Jews.
Lost tribes of Israel, yeah.
Yeah, they're the lost tribes of Israel, which we are not.
Yeah.
The DNA proves that now, finally. We're Oriental. We're not.
You know, I watched a video. It may have been here, Jim.
We're not Jews, we're Oriental.
It's either here on television where they had a young guy that was a... we call them people that...
archaeologists. That's what we've been teaching for 4 weeks on Sunday morning. Archaeology.
He became an archaeologist he was considered high up in the church, considered
The apostles over there, that Mormons have apostles.
Yeah, he was high up there, and so what happened was, is he discovered that what he found out through DNA and everything, the Mormon religion wasn't true.
Well, we showed a table now, DNA versus the Mormon, DNA versus Mormonism. We showed that tape here a few years ago.
Maybe that was worse.
We got that with DNA versus Mormonism.
Yeah,
all this is a scam anyway. But you know what? It appeals to the flesh. Catholicism appeals to the flesh. But that's an outlaw religion. And that came from a group. They were kind of, you go back about 250, 300 years, 300 AD, and they were Baptists. But they went the wrong way. They found another rock. They named it. Found another rock. It was sand that they built their religion upon. All right, Brother David, it's your turn. Thank you for your attention. Be back here at 4:30 if you want to learn something about the book of Genesis. And if you want any of these tapes or DVDs or anything up here, come and see me after.